This is Robert Stark. I'm going to be talking about my trip to LA. I have a photo journal up of the trip, and I am joined here with Pill Eater, Rabbit, and Charles Lincoln.
Hey, Robert.
And Pill Eater, you're the only one of us who has never been to LA.
Unfortunately not. I'm kind of the East Coast person. I've been to New York City many times, but I've never stepped foot in the state of California, unfortunately.
What is kind of your image of LA as like as someone who's never been there? Obviously, you've seen the imagery on film.
When I think about California, I think of very stereotypical images like surfers, Hollywood, the beach, actors. And it's California West Coast culture. And there's often that argument between West Coast, East Coast, and like supposedly West Coast is being more liberal, but East Coast being more like a concrete jungle and industrialist and Donald Trump, and California being more laid back. That's kind of the stereotypical image I have in my head.
And Rabbit, you lived in West Hollywood a while back.
Yeah, I lived there for a couple of years back around like 99 to 2001, and I would say that like when I moved there, like growing up, you know, I grew up with this image of Los Angeles that was like you know, Charlie's Angels and the Rockford Files and stuff like that, and all these you know, certain like California image. And then when I moved there, it was like instantly the place was like completely like third world. Like I had never seen anything like it, and it wasn't like I like came from you know, Omaha or something. Like I was just moving from Phoenix. Even when you get there, like, you know, tons of like the actual like signage on stores and stuff is in all kinds of different language. And I you know, when I would, you know, you have this image of like 1960s like Sunset Strip and all this stuff. But when, you know, I got there, like I moved right to the Sunset Strip. And then when I got there, just walking around, like it was just like, it was totally like third world. Like it wasn't like you, it wasn't like the Beach Boys or anything. It was more like, you know, you were walking, you know, walking through like, Mexico City or something. Like it was just, it was completely alien to me. And there was this place on Sunset that was called, the All American Burger, which is like this, like red, white, and blue.
Oh,
like,
yeah, that, you know, that used burger to be a joint. Big chain in LA, but they all went out of business. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, well, when I went there, my friend used to joke that like we went there, like there, that there wasn't one actual American that worked there. Like, you know, that was my experience.
Charles, you've spent a significant portion of your life in LA, and we've discussed that on the show before.
Yes, I have. And ask me what my impression of LA is.
Charles, if you want to say briefly, how has LA transformed in your short lifetime?
My short lifetime? I wish it was short. And I guess it's short compared to eternity. But, you know, when you think about it, my lifespan of 56 years is actually pretty long compared to it's certainly one third of the history of Los Angeles as a city. It was a village before that, but as a city, it certainly doesn't go back. Even in the 70s, though, the 60s and 70s, it was a white city. It was, if you can imagine this, it was really not that different from Dallas, Texas. Certainly a little bit more liberal in sensibilities, but, you know, it was so liberal that they elected that, you know, communist sympathizer Ronald Reagan as governor. You know, that's how liberal it was. And sure, it's a little bit more liberal than Texas, because Texas has always been sort of, you know, extreme. But, you know, you couldn't really tell much of a difference except for Hollywood and the industry being out here. But that was just sort of like a regional specialty. And there were, I mean, I really vividly remember my grandmother commenting on how amazing it was that this city founded by the Spanish had not one city, try to imagine saying this, not one single person could speak Spanish.
One thing that's kind of ironic in Southern California is all the wealthier white cities have Spanish names like Santa Barbara, Montecito, Palos Verdes, Santa Monica. Well, the ghettos all have Anglo names like Inglewood, Compton. I mean, that's kind of ironic.
I mean, that's an interesting thought. I had never actually thought that before, but yeah, Watts is a pretty waspy name. But you know, it is amazing that the image of Los Angeles, even in television, in the 1960s and 70s, was things like Dragnet and the Beverly Hillbillies, and they portrayed basically an all-white community also. I mean, have you ever been to Watts? Watts is a place with no electrical light.
I've driven through it.
It's one of the eeriest things on Earth. It is definitely like the Third World because it has almost no electric light. I mean, it is a very creepy place because all the houses are very dimly lit. They all have like one, two, or three light bulbs, it seems, per each. There are no bright city lights. You know how bright Brentwood is at night? You can hardly see the stars. You know, for what it's worth, on a clear night, you can actually see the stars from Watts.
Huh.
That's how undeveloped it is.
I would have never imagined that. Huh. It's interesting.
There was an alternative right podcast some time ago with Colin Liddell talking to Greg Johnson and talking about Santa Barbara. He said that
around the time of the Elliot Rodger shooting. Is that the context?
Oh, yeah, it was the Elliot Rodger podcast, actually. And I think this is funny. He said that Johnson said that there were blonde Jewesses or something like that everywhere. Assuming that everyone is a blonde Hollywood actress that's also Jewish. I find that quite strange because I would actually think quite the opposite, where it's like, that's like assuming that like everyone comes from a wealthy upper class, like somehow Jews are up there. But like, I tend to believe that if places are like multicultural or like there would be like, you know, like Asians or like more like.
There definitely are.
Yeah. That's what I've heard like about that. But that's like, other than like, when I think of Jews in a certain place, I think of Israel. Like, I think that is like a common, I don't know if California is pretty much America's Israel. I mean, that doesn't sound like it. I mean, I've been in New York City and there's tons of
Beverly Hills. Oh. Beverly Hills is America's Israel.
Okay. All right. I'm thinking of The Truth Will Live. I'm sorry.
That's
like the only picture I have in my head at the moment because I like The Truth Will Live videos. So I don't know.
Oh, it was something like Greg said. Oh, it was all these like blonde Sarah Michelle Gellar types. Remember, Charles, that comment a mutual friend of us said about like you were at some place.
If all Jews looked like Sarah Michelle Gellar, there would be no such thing as anti-Semitism. Yes, I do.
Okay, that was a comment. But the thing is, I mean, like, those are the kind of girls I'm like the most attracted to. And I think, but I kind of get what Greg is saying, because basically the traditional sort of like Anglo-Nordic population of Southern California has been completely displaced. So if you're growing up in Southern California, like those are the kind of like, those are basically like the absolute best looking girls that you'll see in LA.
I mean, I had a race and Judaism class when I was in undergrad school, like a few years ago. And one of my good friends, her name, well, she was actually, I'm thinking too, because she worked at Hooters and she was Jewish and she had blonde hair. Not like, I know what you're thinking. You're probably thinking she's some kind of Jewish stripper. And that's completely not the point. What I'm saying is it's a rare find to see someone who's actually pretty Jewish and have blonde hair. I think that has a certain.
I would say it's rare. I mean, go to any of the wealthy parts of LA and you see it all over the place.
Okay. Yeah, you have to be in a certain area. And I guess I was in that certain area at a time when in school I was taking literally a class about race and Judaism and then just learning about the whole scene. And
I think that, you know, when I lived in LA, at least there was absolutely tons of Jews and like Jewish women. In fact, I would say that like probably, you know, 90% of people that I knew out there or that I went to parties and would see would be Jewish, like, sense, like all these people that I don't, but there were a lot of like, Jewish women and men, and they were all like, almost all like the young actors. So, I mean, I have to mention something about that if we're talking about, if we're talking about Los Angeles culture.
I mean, West Hollywood is one thing, but Beverly Hills, Beverly Hills is another. And I mean, the upper middle class of West Los Angeles is totally dominated by one and only one ethnic group, and that's Jews. And I mean, a lot of them, at least according to people I've said, I've talked to, a lot of them have acquired this blonde look by either plastic surgery or dyes or both. But I can speak from experience. Some Jewish blondes are genuine blondes. They pass all the necessary tests to be known as genuine blondes. And so it's interesting just how much ethnic diversity there is inside the so-called Jewish race.
Robert's writing a book, and actually the lover in the book happens to be a blonde Jewish girl. I don't know what her name is, but supposedly, I guess you're centering the book around that character. I mean, certainly that is a interesting love affair to have. It's funny because I can relate. I mean, I sort of have experience around being other Jewish people, not to go on like a Jewish tangent, but like being like, I had to take a diversity course at Temple University. I thought it was funny because one, everybody would be kind of in a room full of other Jewish people. And then right afterwards, I would take my Tokyo Lit class like in the morning, and kind of in there, this is kind of a joke, but like, I remember I was like practicing my Japanese and writing down my hiragana and katakana. And like one of my Jewish friends like was sitting right next to me. Is like, oh, hey, you're practicing Hebrew? I'm like, that's actually Japanese. I'm like, nah, you're doing a Japanese Hebrew, right? You got to do that, right? I mean, you read the Torah. I'm like, yeah, I kind of was reading the Torah. And obviously, you know it in Japanese. And it was this kind of strange, like this weird handshake where it was kind of like, I mean, I don't practice Judaism, nor it's not like it's an important, and therefore I kind of disassociate. I'm like, not really. And I always think it's funny because it's like, it's stranger though to think about that. It's like, okay, there's one girl I know who has blonde hair and she's really nice. And like, that would fit the archetype of her being this pretty blonde looking emulation. And then it's like me, and it's like, oh, what, this is the Asian Jew going around or something. Not that I am an Asian Jew.
So I have been doing a photo journal, and I sent you guys like the pictures. I also did the same thing with my trip to San Francisco and my trip to Vegas with Rabbit. Pilliter, do you want to just sort of comment on the overall pictures that I took?
Yeah, they're pretty cool pictures. I mean, I certainly like it because it reminds me of if I was there. I tend to look at that in pictures if I can see myself in front of those pictures. And there's a lot of pictures you've taken, especially of architect and buildings, that is like the current state of what parts of California are. I mean, looking at it right now from like the old theaters to what I like, it's used to say Arcade. But now it's literally a pawn shop with a bunch of graffiti written all over it. Like
it wasn't like a video game arcade. I mean, maybe in the 1930s, I think.
It can mean many things. And maybe in the 80s, maybe in the 80s it was like a video game arcade you would go to. And maybe earlier in that it was like one of those pinball places. But now it's just like a pawn shop. And then also the mention like the Roslyn Hotel, I think it is.
That was the one I think. One of the Richard Ramirez's murders took those there because he actually lived there.
I was thinking more of like the architect. It looks so old and it's just placed there, and like the buildings, they never age and they seem to be there.
Yeah, that's like the kind of historic core of downtown LA, and it's kind of that area. They're starting to like gentrify it, and all these hipsters are coming in. But with those pictures I took of like the signage, what's kind of interesting is in like the 80s, you had this massive wave of immigration, both legal and illegal, from Central America. and that street Broadway, I mean, it is very run down, and you do feel like you're in a third world country. You see all the signage in Spanish. But despite that, one thing I will say is, like, those people who came in there, like, even though you feel like you're in a third world country, at least still have, like, the remnants of the past, like these old, like, Art Deco signs from the 1930s. In places like Pilliter, like a place like Times Square, when they gentrified it in the 90s under Giuliani, they basically just came in and then tore down everything old and, like, replaced it with, like, Disney stores and...
You know, there's a place in New York City I love called Maxie's. It's no longer there now. And that was, like, a old, like, cheese classical hamwich shop. And now in Times Square, it's just not there. It's just abandoned, and they're replacing it with something. I don't know what, but, yeah, I know what you're coming from.
Well, I mean, not exactly sure what to say. I think of more of the things you left out. You, I told you this afternoon, you left out MacArthur Park. You left out Los Angeles County Art Museum and the La Brea Park.
I took pictures of MacArthur Park and the LA County Art Museum from the street. I just didn't post them because the pictures didn't come out as good.
Oh, well, okay, but I mean...
I have one picture of the new Peterson Auto Museum across from the L.A. County Art Museum, the LACMA.
And that was interesting because I had never seen that before. I didn't even know what it was. I mean, it's interesting. I mean, Los Angeles is constantly coming up with new things. And, of course, that's part of the amazing thing. You've got some nice pictures of the Beverly Center and what the clock that's from the Fairfax Market, right?
The clock and the Christmas tree? I think that's Larchmont Village.
That's Larchmont? Okay.
Well, you actually took a picture and you said you didn't do it on purpose.
No, I didn't actually.
But
there
happens to be a man in like a dress and it looks like Chinese, maybe you're right, Korean, but to me, I'm
in Korea because that area, Larchmont Village, is very close to Koreatown.
Yeah, where is that actually?
Where's what?
The picture you took.
Koreatown is like on Vermont. That's Wilshire in Vermont.
There's a picture of it's a man with a dress and a blue shirt, Asian woman, looks like a white male, Asian female, walking down the street. Now, I don't know if they're like going out together, but they're in the close proximity where, okay, they do have a relationship, either friend in an actual marriage or whatever, boyfriend, girlfriend, I don't know, but it just happens to be there.
What I meant to say about West Hollywood a few minutes ago was that, you know, when I was in high school there, you know, it was very, very sedate and middle class, and, you know, I went to the St. Thomas Episcopal Church, and my girlfriend went to the Hollywood Presbyterian Church. How in the last time I went to St. Thomas, I went there for a Christmas Eve service a couple of years ago, and I had an experience I have never had in my entire life. At church, after Christmas Eve Mass, a guy must have actually recognized me from New York because he quoted places I've actually been in New York City and said, didn't I see you here and there and at St. Thomas in New York? And I said, well, it's possible. And basically, it was the first time in my life a guy has ever really put the moves on me in a very major way. This guy was basically, you know, trying to get my life story. Why is it that I was both at St. Thomas on Fifth Avenue and St. Thomas in West Hollywood? And, oh, isn't it amazing that we both had the same, you know, life trajectory? And, you know, he really wanted to take me to this club after it. And basically, I just had to.
Yeah, I had a couple of actually, you know, like I used to get, you know, get hit on or like, you know, harassed. Like I actually identify with like a lot of these women who complain about like catcalling and stuff like that. Cause when I lived there, you know, I was like 21 or something. And when I would like walk down Sunset or something, you know, Santa Monica or something, just like going to the store or something, I would have like dudes trying to hit on me and stuff, like shouting stuff. And one, like the most disturbing incident was when I was like, waiting for this bus, right? And there was this like black dude in like workout gear. And he comes up to me and he's like, he's waiting for the bus too. And like, he asked me like, what's my name or something like that. And like, I was already like annoyed because like, I could already kind of see like where this is going, you know? And I'm just like, and he's like, I got a job for you. And I was like, really? What? You know? And he's like, I'm going to pay you $50 if you let me suck your cock. And I was like, well, no thanks, man. I'm not really interested. Like, it's not going to happen, you know?
I have.
And so at that point, I was just like, I was like, as I was talking to this guy, I like look like over into, I can see this, like this alley in the back. And all of a sudden there's like a guy just like running naked, screaming through this alley. Like it just totally like at the same time this is going on. It was like so weird. And then I tell this black dude, I'm just like, you know, no thanks, whatever, leave me alone. And then I decided, like, I'm not even gonna, like, he wouldn't leave me alone, so I decided I wasn't even gonna like take that bus. I was just gonna like walk to a different bus stop. And like for like blocks and blocks, like I could still hear this guy yelling my name like for like two or three blocks as I'm like walking away. It was just totally disturbing.
Was that kind of, yeah. West Hollywood used to, it's become a lot more upscale, but there used to be kind of like the seedy gay scene.
It's kind of like, it's mixed because the area and the housing and everything is still really nice and everything, but there's still a seedy undercurrent to it, you know, especially if you walk down Santa Monica Boulevard and you see like, you know, late at night or something in all the gay bars, there's still like just tons of like just creepy shit that goes on beneath it, even though it's somewhat of a wealthy and nice area. But keep in mind, this was in the year 2000. So whatever it was like then was probably like amplified now, and it's probably much more horrifying.
One thing about LA that's important to point out is my pictures make LA look really, I mean, I think I do a good job of making LA look like a appealing place to visit. But the thing is, the city is extremely spread out. So most of the city looks pretty shitty. These are just these sort of hand-selected images of like the most appealing locations I found.
Right. They make it look like it's still like a civilization or something.
Yeah, it's like it's better if you're indoors and not outside. And then when you're indoors, you have security and comfort. But when you go outside, everything is like ugly and destructive. That's what I find about most of these like major cities.
Well, LA is so spread out. That's the thing, is like New York, where you're close to, and San Francisco, where I recently visited and did that podcast and photojournal of. I visited the whole Bay Area, which is a massive region, but San Francisco is a compact city where you can basically visit all the important parts of the city. And pretty much, I mean, you could, if you're in good shape, within walking distance. LA, I mean, so you take downtown LA on one end and Santa Monica on the other. That whole area is basically the most important parts of LA, stretch from, you have like Santa Monica, Westwood, Century City, Beverly Hills, West Hollywood, Hollywood, Miracle Mile, Koreatown, downtown LA, and that is this massive area. Like in traffic, that drive can be like well over an hour even.
Well, you're describing Miracle Mile, and so those are on parallel streets, so you'd have to be retracing your steps to hit both of them.
LA has pretty lousy transit compared to other cities. They did build a transit line that connects downtown and Santa Monica, and that actually just opened fairly recently. And there's plans for extending the subway down Wilshire. But the problem with that is because LA is so spread out, we're not going to have a truly like integrated transit system like New York does until like the middle of the century, if not longer.
I think, like you said, it's so spread out that, there are parts of LA that look really nice, like Pacific Palisades and parts of Santa Monica. You know, it's like if to go from there to like, you know, mid Wilshire or Hollywood or Koreatown or one of those places is just like two completely different, completely different worlds.
Pilliter, do you want to comment on any of the pictures that really stood out to you that were your personal favorites?
Well, first, I really like the Sheikh Temple. I find that really cool.
That was New Hollywood, the Sikh Temple, yeah.
Okay, that I find that really interesting. And then there's the later buildings of such as the Pavilion Mall entrance.
Oh, Westside Pavilion Mall entrance.
Yeah, that reminds me of like some old Myst or Riven game from like 95, and it's the odd point and click adventure type of thing.
That was taken from the roof of the mall. That mall, I mean, they remodeled it a while back, but it still has a kind of an 80s aesthetic. But originally, Charles, you've been to that mall. You know what I'm talking about in West LA.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
It originally had this kind of a like faux Parisian theme with all these different geometric, colorful shapes. And it was done by the same architect, Jared A., who's done a lot of stuff in Vegas. I think he did design the Wynn, remember that, and the Bellagio. Remember the Wynn, Rabbit?
Yeah, I remember it. The Wynn. You took pictures also of the that area in Century City, right, where Conquest of the Planet of the Apes.
Oh,
was
yeah.
Done, right? I was always a big fan of that that look. It's kind of like a brutalist future. Still look the same.
Century City Mall, it used to have this really cool 60s, 70s futurist aesthetic, but they remodeled it, and now it just looks like a generic like upscale shopping mall. And they used to have this really cool, like, 70s futurist, like, underground shopping mall, which, I mean, I kind of am fascinated by those, like, underground spaces, but most people in California prefer to be out in the sun, so I guess it wasn't economically viable, so they tore that down. And there's a lot of those, like, 60s, 70s, like, high-rises, but a lot of that old, like old kind of original stuff that you're talking about has been destroyed.
I mean, you could say the mall looks like some science fiction empire, Imperium. I mean, speaking of like old 70s and 80s designs, I mean, like the In-N-Out burger place still has that vintage aesthetic to it. I think it's like deliberate.
That In-N-Out actually is fairly new.
Okay, yeah, because
that's
deliberate.
In West Village.
That's deliberate. Compared to the Village.
To kind of emulate that old style.
Compared to the Pavilion Mall, which is like... it does have this weird space sci-fi edge. I think it's more like Myst and Riven, like a computer 95 point-and-click game. But
and Rabbit, you've been to the Beverly Center Mall. That used to have this kind of... that was built in the 80s, but it used to have this kind of... like spaceship-like aesthetic with these like glass tunnel elevators and these cool like red neon beams, but they remodel that, and a lot of this stuff it ends up looking like crap. And then they're gonna remodel. I think both Westside Pavilion and Beverly Center are planned to undergo major renovations, but they end up they don't like build anything great. They just ruin them. But Rabbit, you remember the original Beverly Center and the original Century City.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember exactly what you're talking about too, when you would go up the escalators from the street and there would be those, you know, lights kind of, and beam. It was just very like kind of almost kind of that late 80s or 90s kind of neon kind. I want to say it just reminds you of those like, you know, those 80s like fashion movies or something, or like where they have like an action sequence or something that goes through one of those malls, and it's just like looks like that. And it's a shame that they always like are constantly updating these places instead of just like waiting until that like comes back in vogue. You know, it's just like by the time they finish updating, then they've updated it to something that is just gross. You know,
yeah,
they should have just waited. Like,
always been the trend with historic preservation. Like, all these Art Deco treasures. Like, there was this, there was the Richfield Oil Building, which was an Art Deco high rise that was built in like the 1920s, and I think that was demolished in the 1960s. And then Art Deco was appreciated maybe later on, like say by the 80s. And there was this kind of an Art Deco revival in the 80s. Like there was that, what was that place used to work? I have a picture of it. It's like an 80s high rise, but done in the kind of 30s Art Deco style. Charles used to work there.
Oh, the Home Savings?
Oh, that, yeah, that's the one. And then mid-century modern, there was the mid-century modern, like, space-age style. And that sort of came back in vogue in the last, like, the last 20 years, basically. But the 70s to 80s stuff.
I don't know. It is starting to come back because you're seeing all of this, like, you know, all of that vaporwave stuff and everything is totally harkens back. And I see that when I see these kids making like this vaporwave art and stuff, it reminds me of little like, you know, packaging on products and things that I bought, in the 80s and 90s and stuff that was just like that. I never even appreciated as having any kind of, distinct, aesthetic to it. You know, it was just like, but yeah, I have some old microphones that I bought from Radio Shack because I was kind of nostalgic. I got like these 80s and 90s microphones, and the boxes for them are like, you know, have like this weird like purple and teal like kind of design on it. It's totally like early 90s, almost the vaporwave aesthetic. So that stuff actually is coming back in terms of...
Well, the vaporwave is huge with the online illustrations, but I'm talking about with the architecture.
Well, it just depends. You're seeing like a lot more of architecture now is just purely, it's a mix of different aesthetics, and a lot of it is just based on economics or whatever. I find that in general, you're seeing a lot less, aesthetics actually going into a lot of this, these new housing developments or what. They're just kind of like a hodgepodge. They're more like feature oriented than they are even aesthetics.
I mean, that's absolutely true. And I also got some photographs of the Buenaventure Hotel in downtown LA. And that was designed by the architect, John C. Portman, that we were talking about. Pilliter, you remember we talked about him?
The very...
Do you see the one that was the very... I have the image of the tunnel, and then right after that, that's the Buenaventure, and that has like the 70s futurist thing. And if you go in... I didn't get a chance to go inside. I haven't been there in a long time, but it has these massive atriums and these like really cool like escalators.
I'm looking at the Rodeo Collection and those...
Rodeo Collection.
Oh,
that,
Rodin, okay.
Yeah. Place, that's a cool place.
Yeah, because thinking of vaporwave, it's just like there's this obsession with like the Roman statue and like some old civilization, and you took a picture.
Wait, are you looking at the Roman fountain or the Rodin collection?
Both of them, the Roman fountain too, and I'm looking at those few. There seems to be like people add in these old fashioned things from the past, but then update it with these like exotic elevators and like buildings that like reached the sky and have these strange meanings. I think there is.
Well, the Roman fountain. I forget the name of that place. It's like a major Hollywood agency in Beverly Hills. That place, I think, that place is really old. I think it goes back to like the 1940s. The Rodeo Collection, that was built in the 1980s, but it has kind of like the old brick with like the kind of like futurist elements.
Yeah, I mean, they were trying really hard 30 years ago, and now they're trying their hardest today where technology is going, and things are made in the past, we just have to deal with it, and then people just build over these things, and kind of now are having a preservation thing. And I think that's where the whole vaporwave thing is really coming from, where it's just one thing built on top of another until it's like a clash of consumerism or something very strange.
Yeah, there's that. Just reminds me of another architectural trend that I've seen, which is actually amusing to me, is that since a lot of mid-century modern has come back, at least in you know, places like L.A. and Phoenix and maybe like Washington, and that I've started to notice that like apartment buildings and things like that were built in the 80s and 90s are actually being updated to look like their mid-century modern style, and they're being like marketed as like this, you know, real modernist style when they were just like totally like this, you know, 1980s and 90s postmodern. They've updated to actually go with like a mid-century modern look, and it's like it isn't even like very passable most of the time. It looks pretty bad, but I just think it's funny that like that they're quote, you know, updating this stuff to a style that was like, you know, 20 years previous, and like trying to pass off as like they're from that era, when it's like, no, this building was, this was built in 1987.
I do see that trend with new high rise proposals, because as far as architecture goes, there hasn't really been that many new great, like innovative styles. But I have seen renderings for new, like, luxury high-rises in downtown and Hollywood that have that kind of a 60s aesthetic. And another picture, I have a picture of the Beverly Hilton Hotel, and they're building this high-rise hotel extension there. And it's still under construction, but they're trying to kind of go with the original kind of a streamlined modern style. So you do see, like, our architectural revival movements, and the same with the one that that place Charles used to work, that it was built in the 80s, but it has this sort of 30s deco style. You saw the ones of those cool kind of 70s style high rises in Beverly Hills. I think Charles, you thought they were the Hustler,
right?
Larry Flynn Publications, right?
Infinity, and they're sort of shaped like the infinity symbol.
Do you remember when those were built? They looked very 70s.
No, I have no idea. I would guess 80s, actually. I was looking it up. I should look it up again, because that's 97. The one I was thinking, you were looking at 9701 Beverly Wilshire Boulevard. I'm pretty sure that's 9701.
9701.
Yeah, 9701 Wilshire. There's a whole lot about it, as a matter of fact. Oh, it's a virtual office building. How do you like that?
Some of the buildings, that's the exactly one I was looking at. Some of the buildings, like the one being made, they have these strange buildings that are like being erected from the ground, and they remind me of something like out of Dubai. I can't remember the tower, but the one tower in Dubai where the sun sets, and the sun, like as it sets, goes through the circle of the building, and it goes like straight through, like a very visual thing.
I know what you're talking about.
I can't, the clock something tower, I can't recall its name, but it's a very famous building in Dubai. But
it's the tallest one, the Burj, I think it's like Burj Khalifa or something like that.
Yeah, and it seems like these styles in California, maybe you just took it at sunset, but it's giving me this weird Dubai feel, where the buildings are becoming these strange, circular, erected, but very shiny and silver, expensive monuments, erecting from the sky. And it seems like it's limited space, but it's just very tall. I think that's where they're going with.
9701 Wilshire, Beverly Hills 90212, is called the Roxbury Plaza. You're right, it was completed in 1974. That's the year I graduated high school. Amazing. 13-story tower. Undulating parallelogram. Architect Anthony Lumsden.
So, Pillater, you saw those pictures I took of the interactive cafe, and you said that they had a very cyberpunk feel to them.
Well, certainly with the neon has something to do with being in the future and the colors, especially at nighttime, where all you see is colors and amidst blackness. And when you go in to consume, there's this really strange comfort environment, pretty much where you're bringing your date or something to do out of boredom, either taking dinner or like to spend the night before you go to bed. I mean, with the interactive calf, especially with the use of internet access, it says www and it's like this Earth globe. It's telling you to use the internet, and there's some weird science fiction element to that. And, you know, I find it more of like something that has happened in the mid 80s period. They just left it there.
That place has been there as long as I could remember, but if I had to guess, that was probably started in the 80s. Charles, do you know when that place opened up?
The Interactive?
Yeah, the Interactive in Santa Monica.
Well, That goes back to the 60s, actually. That's been there forever.
Do you know, like, the signage? Well, the signage looks very 80s. Was that there since the beginning?
No, it's gone through several different names, so probably not. But that's probably, I mean, that may be just sort of a retrofit, because it's always been a computer cafe ever since they, you know, the PC came out. But it pre-existed the PC by a long term.
And it's also one of the last, like, small businesses that have managed to survive in that area. Most of Santa Monica. I mean, one of our last shows, we talked about that bookstore, Hennessy and Ingalls, that moved to downtown LA. But most of
Did you visit it downtown?
No, I didn't get a chance to visit it. But most of Santa Monica is, like, just nothing but chain stores, like the Interactive Cafe. And a few of the famous iconic places, like the King's Head Tavern, like those are some of the last small businesses that are still there.
Yeah, it's amazing. I just can't believe that it's corporatism. I tell you, they're just trying to squeeze more and more money out of the same areas, and you know they don't want to make money by developing anything new, so they just try to raise the price of what already exists. And you know, when the Santa Monica promenade, the Third Street Promenade, was first opened, it was not wall-to-wall Iranians and Mexicans, and now it is. It's just, even in the 22 years since the LA, you know, the what do they call it, the Martin Luther King Day earthquake, even in the 22 years since then, the character of Santa Monica and Los Angeles in general has changed a great deal.
What's interesting about the kind of character of Santa Monica is the waterfront location. The view across to Malibu is spectacular. I have some pictures of that. And then architecture-wise, you have that Art Deco clock tower, which I have a picture of. And then you have the Georgian Hotel, which is also from that era, which is kind of turquoise. It has a very Miami feel. And then you have another high rise with kind of a cool 70s look. Then there's like the Fairmont Hotel, which also is very 70s, like along the waterfront. But if you go, Pilliter, you've seen those pictures, the pictures I posted.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at some. I'm actually looking at the Brentwood Gardens pictures above the cafe.
Oh,
actually,
yeah, that's that the Brentwood Gardens. That's very 80s. Mm-hmm. With Santa Monica, if you leave like the main waterfront area, I mean, most of the city is just like the like just kind of like generic like four-story apartment buildings. It's pretty it's pretty like if you go to San Francisco, like you see beautiful architecture pretty much everywhere you go. LA has these like pockets like the waterfront in Santa Monica, and places like downtown LA have a lot of great architecture. I mean, even Beverly Hills. I mean, Beverly Hills is kind of synonymous with like trashy nouveau riche Hollywood culture, but it has a lot of architectural gems. When it comes down to it, I mean, because LA is so spread out, you have these centers, but it's the space in between that are like these just like wastelands.
Actually, after 1 month living in LA, my car actually got totaled while it was parked in Santa Monica, since you guys,
okay.
We're talking about that so long. I wanted to bring that up, is that I had parked my car and then I went to the promenade. I was there like maybe 5 minutes. And when I came back, my car was just completely destroyed. Like, it wasn't just like someone hit or something. It was like demolished. It looked like, you know, when like in like National Lampoon's Vacation, when like Chevy Chase gets his car back from the dealer after he gets the wrong one. Like, it was like, it was just completely destroyed. And like, I was in shock, and I just looked around and there was like nobody in sight. And finally, like, this cop comes up to me and is like, you know, is this your car? And I was like, yeah. And they told me that like some drunken Mexicans hit it and drove off. And actually, like, this homeless guy got their plate number or whatever. And so I was just in shock, but that was just me going to the Santa Monica Promenade for like 5 minutes, like just to like get some tea and walk around. I came back, my car was destroyed. I had been living there 1 month, and it was just like, I mean, I was just in shock. And I, you know, I was new to the area, so I really had like no idea like what I was even going to do or
how to get home. And this was before like Google Maps. I mean, and
oh yeah, I mean it was like before like Craigslist even. I mean it was like I didn't even have a cell phone. You know, I didn't even have a cell phone until I was like 23 or something. You know, so there was like no one even had. Like people were just starting to have cell phones and they were like just the crap Nokia or whatever. And I didn't have anyone I could call anyways. So I was like just stuck there. And I ended up getting like this huge check from my insurance company. Well, it wasn't huge, but it was like $7,000 or something, which is like at that time was like more money than I could have ever dreamed of, you know? So it was like my car got destroyed in Santa Monica, but also was like, it kind of saved me because I had all this money. All of a sudden I was able to sustain myself and just party and go wild for like months and months and months for that.
So we talked about downtown LA, the West Side. Rabbit, do you want to comment on the Valley?
Yeah, I always really, really loved the Valley because I didn't live there. And so if you live in, on the other side of the hill or whatever, and you don't have a car, like getting to the Valley, at least at that time, it was like a mysterious place or something. So I was like, everyone I knew, kind of looked down upon the Valley because, you know, it was kind of more seen as more of like this kind of, I guess like tacky and, you know, like white suburban. And then, you know, you had the porn industry in the Valley. It was just kind of like,
but what part of the Valley is massive? There's basically like, different elements of the Valley. There are like the ghetto parts, like Pacoima, Van Nuys, Panorama City. There's a few sort of like you have a place like Chatsworth where I always take the train out there. And a lot of the porn industry stuff is filmed out in Chatsworth, but that's one of the last kind of like working class white communities. You have a few like middle class pockets left. And then you have a lot of like wealth in the southern part of the Valley, like near Ventura Boulevard and Studio City. You have a lot of along that area. You have like a lot of actors and the kind of like a lot of the people who work in Hollywood, but not like the Hollywood elite, but just kind of like the workers live in that area, like Studio City. And that area, like parts of Ventura Boulevard, are actually fairly walkable. But most
like Sherman Oaks, like
yeah, like Ventura Boulevard and Sherman Oaks. But most of the Valley is just kind of like these. It's very spread out, car oriented, like single family homes. I didn't remember you mentioned the whole like the Sherman Oaks Galleria was another famous mall that they remodeled into something really stupid.
Yeah, they definitely ruined that place. It was in like. I think it was in Valley Girl, that movie, and Commando, and it maybe as briefly in like Terminator 2 or something like that. But I always like a lot of the people that I knew, they all looked down upon the Valley, but it was because it was seen as this kind of like, you know,
like
white
middle
and
class?
Like suburban. Yeah, exactly. And like suburban,
the thing is,
oriented.
It's not like that so much anymore. No.
No, not anymore. And but when I lived there, like I came from Phoenix, so to me it was like when these like really like snotty, like kind of like hipster, like you know, actor people and whatnot would like talk about how they, you know, like the Valley, like ew, gross, you know, like to me that was like it represented more of like where it was like an attack on like what I came from, you know, too. So to me, like the Valley
was
like, you're
from like a middle-class background in the Midwest.
Well, you're in Phoenix too, like, because like people would always say that, you know, the Valley had like this kind of like desert vibe or something like Phoenix, and whatnot. So to me, like it made me think, well, like, geez, like, you know, I identify more with those people, even though from the standpoint of like, where I'm kind of with you, where I like, you know, monorails and things like that. To me, it was kind of like the Valley was just had this kind of like, even though it was associated with porn, it had a kind of Southern California, like you know, 1960s, like, innocence about it, you know, where you just look at all these old movies of the, you know, these, like, teenagers in the valley and stuff like that, where it's like, it wasn't really like that anymore, but for the same reasons these people hated it, I kind of identified with it somewhat.
You kind of brought up a kind of interesting point, because, like, Charles and I did a show about, like, density and, like, single-family homes a while back on Cities. And I am kind of like you, Rabbit, is on one hand, like, I see a lot of the trends in L.A. where you have this extreme income inequality, where it's becoming like a third world city, and you have like these wealthy types and also kind of hipsters who kind of deride like regular middle class white people. And then that's also kind of my background as well. But then the other hand, like, I find these kind of suburban communities of single-family homes to be extremely kind of boring, and I'm interested in stuff kind of that you are, like monorails and skyscrapers.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of it's a push-pull thing for me too, because, you know, like, I lived in West Hollywood, you know, and it was an extremely dense place, but I loved it. But at the same time, like, I didn't, you know, I respected a lot of these suburban communities because I, you know, some people, like, I identified with those people a lot more tribally, and like, and a lot more in the way that, you know, that they want to fortify themselves against a lot of like a lot of this kind of, shit that is encroaching on them. It's kind of like these fortified villages, like, you know, in the Roman at late stage Roman Empire or something like that. But it's kind of always like, you know, I was more of like a Republican when I was younger, but it was a lot of it was because it was just like, it wasn't because of really ideas or anything. It was just that it was like I tribally identified.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was like a contrarian in the environment that I was in. I identified with these people tribally because I was right up in the middle of all of this this other stuff. So it was like, culturally, I like this stuff, but on the other hand, like, I can see like that these people are like tribally against like my people, you know, and they want to destroy them. You know, so that's
I was particularly thinking of Chinatown. Places where
in LA or Philadelphia?
In Philadelphia, where I would hang out, and I can understand where that's going. I mean, like, in Northern Liberties in Philadelphia, yeah, that's where all, like, the stuff white people, like, hang out at, and, like, the urbanite place. But then it's like, you go down to Fishtown, it's more lower class, and then there's the punk scene.
Oh, Charles Murray wrote a book about Fishtown. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And Fishtown is known for being that lower class, but they're trying to make it more, like, sweeple, and, like, it is very up and coming, but still at the same time, it does have this strange Philadelphia white class to it. But at the same time, it's like Diamond Street is famous because it's a bunch of blacks and they shoot each other up all the time.
Huh.
And yeah, I can totally understand where you're coming from, because like Chinatown is like right in the center of Philadelphia, yet there's hardly any like crime there. And it's just like,
so this kind of goes to the whole kind of alt-left thing, where like an ideal alt-left society would sort of have a lot of these aspects of these different kind of swipple utopias, like San Francisco and the nicer parts of LA, combined with kind of a strong white middle class. Rabbit, would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think, you know, what I've been kind of gravitating towards is like, you know, I actually really appreciate like these suburban cities more, and these suburban areas. To me, what would be ideal is if they were kind of transformed more into like I would like these suburbs more if they were transformed into kind of a more self-contained like urban style villages and almost like compounds. But I think that these if people want to get serious about using the suburbs to you know, to become autonomous and to become independent from these hostile area, hostile diverse, you know, areas and whatnot. Like, these suburban cities need to become repurposed to be more of like fortified enclaves that really just have a lot more going on and that are kind of like their own self-contained urban villages, you know, with, you know, lakes and little shops and so, not like strip malls, but, you know, self-contained urban areas that become kind of more. I've been talking about that for a while, but I think that if you're going to move the U.S. towards anything where it's like there's real kind of a resistance or any kind of, you know, regionalism or more like Balkanization or whatever, that you more autonomy, like these people that just move to the suburbs, like, people have to get like serious about making the suburbs like real self-contained enclaves, not just these,
well,
like,
the problem is houses kind in the middle of this nowhere. Goes back to this dichotomy, is that the people who have these like grand aesthetic visions for the suburbs and want to make them into these great places like you're talking about, they tend to be these kind of wealthier swipple types. Well, a lot of people who are kind of maybe in our tribe in an identitarian sense,
they're not imaginative enough.
They don't have the same grand aesthetic visions, and that kind of puts us in a very kind of a small, like, a niche.
Right. Well, that, you know, that just means, you know, we have to become more cult-like, I guess, you know? Who knows?
We've talked a lot about L.A., and do you want to comment on making any comparisons with my observations from San Francisco, Rabbit?
I don't know. I'm curious as to what you... you know, which one that you identify with more, you know, and for what reasons, like, which, to me, like, I've never been a fan of San Francisco. I know it's like, it's a city that's romanticized by a lot of people, but I've always been more, attached to Los Angeles, you know, for whatever reason.
I have a kind of a love hate relationship with, with LA, because L.A. has all these negative qualities, like the income inequality, the urban sprawl, but it does have these pockets of, like, architecture. And also it has, like, there's something kind of magical about the geographic setting when you get, like, the desert Santa Ana winds coming in and, like, the mountain settings and the snow in the winter. I mean, LA does have a certain beauty to it, even with all the like negative sidebacks. But I would say by far, I would view the Bay Area as like far superior overall.
I was always just obsessed with Los Angeles as a kid, just because I was an '80s kid and I was, you know, obsessed with movies and TV and. Even though I didn't even live there, like growing up, the Los Angeles Rams was always my favorite football team, which is like, is kind of sad in a way because they like left Los Angeles. And then, you know, 20 years later, they finally came back and it would be a huge deal for me, except that like, I don't even care about football anymore because it's like, it's become so, it's so like, you know, it's so gross and like, you know, yeah. Anti-white now that like, I can't even watch it, you know? So it's like, it's so totally, depressing, and it's almost kind of like the city itself is, you know, if I always dreamed when I moved away from there, like I had always dreamed that like, you know, someday I'm going to move back, you know, with more money and it's going to be great. But like 20 years later, like, you know, I have money to move back, but like, I don't even think that I would even want to. It's like, it's so like, the place is so gross now. It's like, it doesn't resemble anything, that I remember.
I mean, LA, it's the quality of life is it's pretty low. It's extremely low for your average person. I mean, it's insane. You have these areas that are supposed to be wealthy, and you go in and you see all these like ugly condominiums, and these are supposed to be the wealthiest area. I mean, the only thing, if you were like a multimillionaire, you can have one of those like cool mid-century space-age homes in the Hollywood Hills overlooking the city. I mean, that would be great.
When I lived there, I noticed that, like, people that were like pretty wealthy or whatever, that, you know, lived in like Culver City or wherever, like I would go to their houses and it was like, you know, the place was probably super expensive, but it wasn't even like as nice as like my, you know, my grandma's house in Phoenix.
Culver City's a place that is traditionally been kind of lower middle class, but what's happening is cities like Santa Monica, they're getting so expensive, and Santa Monica is very like anti-development. Like Santa Monica just passed a ballot initiative that would ban any building, not ban it, but ban that would any building that's over like three stories or two stories would have to be put to a city vote. So these wealthier cities have this like NIMBYism where they want to limit any new population growth. So what happens is you get these places like Culver City, Westchester, Mar Vista, which have traditionally been middle class. Now those places, like the houses there, are approaching $1 million.
Yeah, and then even like these other places, like I don't know if you made it into the high desert or any of that, but like those places are incredibly depressing to me because they
are. You talking about the like the areas on the drive to Vegas?
Like Apple Valley.
Yeah, I've driven through there. I've driven through there on the way to Vegas. I stopped in like Barstow, and basically, like it's this place in the middle of the. I mean, the desert itself, the natural desert is beautiful, but you get these communities of like track housing. They're economically isolated and desolate, except for truck stops. And like the people, there are people like moving up from like the ghetto who are trying to like. I don't know, like, just try to have some semblance of a middle class, but they end up, like, reproducing the ghetto out in the middle of the desert.
Well, right, and also, like, a lot of those areas have been, you know, just flooded with illegals and whatnot, but you can watch old videos on YouTube, even from, like, the 70s, and you can see, like, that it was, like, a pretty nice place to live in, and I always really got excited about those places, because when I would drive to Los Angeles, like you start creeping up on those places. It's like, you know, you're getting close, you know, so you get, I kind of like, you know, had it like a,
oh, you're
a romantic feeling about those kind of places.
Approaching, LA from Phoenix.
Yeah. Like when you're driving to LA and then, you know, you start coming up on like, you know, San Bernardino and these places, like, you know, you're getting close, you know, you see like Riverside and all these other places. And, it's just sad because you know that they were at one time kind of these nice, really suburban areas. But if you look up the stuff online right now, they're like, people are like, yeah, you know, nobody moved to the high desert. Like these places are horrible now. They're totally overrun and they're super ghetto. Like you don't want to be caught outside after dark, in these places. Like,
and
it's
that
just depressing
ties in with another kind of a trend in urbanism, because it's kind of like this donut hole effect, because there's this trend where we're almost kind of – traditionally it was there was white flight out of the cities to the suburbs, but now what's happening is the suburbs are becoming more ghetto. And the urban cores of cities like downtown LA are being gentrified by hipsters. So you're sort of seeing a reversal of that trend.
Right. They're being like people are being priced out of a lot of these urban areas. And so like wealthier people are moving to those gentrified areas. And these also a lot of these suburbs typically relied on a few huge companies or like, you know, defense contractors and whatnot. And once those, you know, whatever big company that was kind of supporting the town or whatever, once they either moved away or shut down or whatever, then the town really had nothing going for it at that point. Once whatever, a lot of these Southern California, you know, aerospace companies and stuff like that. Once they kind of went down the tubes, that was
was big in both the Valley and the South Bay. We are at the end of the show. It's been a very interesting talk about LA. I'd like to thank Rabbit, Pilleter, and Charles Lincoln for joining me.
Thank you.
Great pleasure.